Welcome to the Federal Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federal Society's Corporations, Securities, and Antitrust Practice Groups, was recorded on Monday, June 25, 2018, during a live Courthouse Steps telephone conference call held exclusively for Federal Society members.
Welcome to the Federal Society's telephone conference call. This afternoon, we will be discussing today's Supreme Court decision in Ohio versus American Express. My name is Michael Wallen, and I am the Assistant Director of Practice Groups at the Federal Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Today, we are happy to have with us O.H. Skinner, who is Chief of the Government Accountability and Special Litigation Unit in the Arizona Attorney General's Office. After hearing from our speaker, we will go to audience Q&A. Thank you for speaking with us, O.H. The floor is yours.
Thank you so much, and thanks everybody for joining today. Again, just in case that the front boilerplate is inadequate, the state of Arizona and our Office of the Arizona Attorney General were involved at various stages in this case, but the views you're going to hear today are my own personal views and kind of a hot take based on a couple hours of being able to review the opinion this morning. The rest of you had a few hours head start on me because I'm here in Arizona. So as a little bit of background, but not hopefully too much background, this is a case that arose out of an action that was envisioned against Amex, MasterCard, and Visa regarding how they steered in their contracts with merchants, and I should be clear, in their contracts with merchants, those card providers, networks, required merchants to not steer customers to lower cost services. So anybody who, there was a little shop next to me in law school that if you walked in and said, I'm interested in using a credit card, they would sometimes say, oh, but it's really important that you use a debit card or cash because, we have to pay those high charges. Anybody who's seen something like that, that would technically be a violation of the anti-steering provisions in these contracts. MasterCard and Visa settled prior to major litigation in this case, but Amex didn't, and they lost in the district court. But then where things started to get very interesting is in the Second Circuit, a panel that consisted of Judge Winter, Judge Wesley, and Judge Droney, with Judge Wesley writing, reversed the district court in this case, backed Amex, and two particular things jumped out at the time to me and were topics that were of discussion amongst many of the players in the case. The first one is that Judge Wesley went out of his way to note that the district court had relied in substantial part on the idea that there was circumstantial evidence to support a conclusion that there was an anti-competitive effect in this case. Most people here probably in the antitrust space at least know that if you're going to want to fight one of these antitrust cases, step one is you're defining the market, and then step two is the plaintiffs bear the initial burden of showing an anti-competitive effect in the relevant market. And here Judge Wesley went out of his way in a way that really attracted attention, at least to me and to a couple others that I know, in noting that the circumstantial evidence was inadequate, and that there needed to be more in order to show the required anti-competitive effect. And that was a major deal from, the view that I had of looking at this case, and I think others should look at it. Also, Judge Wesley noted that there was a looking at the wrong market. And this is what a lot of people are going to talk about in the analysis of the case today, is that the question wasn't whether there was an anti-competitive effect in the price that Amex was charging to merchants, which is, the businesses. Undoubtedly, there may have been higher prices by Amex charged to those merchants or an increase in the price through this anti-steering provision. But the benefits needed to be looked at from the consumer perspective. It was a two-sided market. You need to look at both sides of it. You couldn't just look at what was happening with the merchants. You need to look at the merchants and the consumers. And that jumped out as a huge thing to me because this is something that any of us who really believe that antitrust law should be doing something for consumers needs to recognize as a narrow view of the market here would have actually resulted in a harm to consumers. This would have been applying the antitrust laws in a way that would have ignored a consumer benefit from this market and focused instead on simply what was happening to the merchants. And Judge Wesley noted that that was incorrect. Now, Justice Thomas's opinion in a, I think this was somewhat surprising to some that he was writing this opinion, and many seem to think that the oral argument went in favor of the states. But Justice Thomas's opinion echoes the two themes that Judge Wesley had written on. Now, circling back to a little bit of procedural history, once the Second Circuit's opinion came down, you started to see some states, Arizona included, drop out of the coalition of states. That was an interesting outcome. It may have reflected the idea that Judge Wesley's opinion actually was a very pro-consumer opinion. You then saw at the petition stage a large group of states, including many that I end up working with on a daily basis, sought cert, but DOJ opposed cert. DOJ had been riding along with the states throughout everything in the case, but opposed cert. The court took the case, and then DOJ went and continued to support the states. And the oral argument seemed to go in favor of the states and against Amex, is what most people in the world of the internet seem to be saying. But yet the opinion came out today, and it's 5-4, and Justice Thomas wrote it. And what I think is particularly salient and may end up being the key things to consider, other than the effect it may have on your use of your Amex card, is that on the ninth page of the slip-op, Justice Thomas has this interesting phrasing where he may be embracing this robust view of what the required showing is, a more robust view of what a plaintiff in an antitrust action must show. Justice Thomas says, to determine whether restraint violates the rule of reason, the parties agree that a three-step burden-shifting framework applies. Under this framework, the plaintiff has the initial burden to prove that the challenged restraint has a substantial anti-competitive effect that harms consumers in the relevant market. And interestingly, this is entirely free-form by him. This is not quoting an opinion. He has a C-cite to a treatise. And he has also a C-cite to a Second Circuit opinion from the 90s. So this may well be something that ends up having an effect going forward, the idea that now you don't just need to be able to show some anti-competitive effect through circumstantial evidence. You may need to have to show a substantial anti-competitive effect that harms consumers, which may well raise the burden at the front end and make it slightly easier for defendants to defend against antitrust claims where there is no real consumer harm. Justice Thomas spends a significant part of the opinion then talking about the main meat, I think, for the public, which is the idea that this is a two-sided market, that there are merchants and that there are cardholders, and that the more merchants you have, the more cardholders will benefit because they have more options to use their credit card. And the more cardholders you have, the more merchants benefit because that is something that ends up being highly valuable to the merchants, is having access to a huge network of people who will spend their money. And that the definition of the market, the goal of the market is to increase transactions, and that you need both sides for this, and that if you actually raise the price too high on one side of the two-sided market, you're going to see merchants drop off or consumers drop off. And so you have to balance this and shift the pricing to ensure that you have the appropriate equilibrium of merchants and consumers. This is a significant part of the opinion. Justice Thomas then notes that Amex uses its higher merchant fees, this is on 16 of the slip-op, Amex uses its higher merchant fees to offer its cardholders a more robust rewards program, which is necessary to maintain cardholder loyalty and encourage the level of spending that makes Amex valuable to merchants. That Amex allocates prices between merchants and cardholders differently than Visa and MasterCard is simply not evidence that it wields market power to achieve anti-competitive effects. This is one of the key aspects. If I'm looking at this, and I would encourage others to think about it, he's really focused on the idea that whatever the effects on merchants are, because there is a benefit that is flowing to the consumer, the cardholder, you can't myopically look at one side of this two-sided market. And he is very aware of the effects on consumers and is focused on the idea that because of Amex's approach, you are getting higher value of rewards program for consumers, you are seeing consumers have access to a different spectrum of cards. He talks about the amount of competition this has brought into the market. He talks about the idea that Chase has brought in a whole new line of credit cards specifically designed to target Amex and that also impose higher fees on merchants because they're trying to scramble and respond to Amex. So the opinion is a strong embrace of the idea that you cannot ignore the consumers in this kind of analysis. And given that two-sided markets like this may well be exactly how a lot of new internet companies should be analyzed in this space, this may well be a very important opinion going forward in terms of focusing on the actual consumer effects and not just trying to find some theoretical antitrust violation embedded in a business model somewhere. And then at the end of the opinion, we're going back to this idea of the burden. It's the very last paragraph. In sum, the plaintiffs have not satisfied the first step of the rule of reason. They have not carried their burden of proving that Amex's anti-steering provisions have anti-competitive effects. So, you know, to most people, I think you're going to hear a lot about the both sides of the market, the pro-consumer perspective, how important it is to look at the benefits, and whether in that whole market, given that both merchants and consumers are technically customers of Amex, that you're not seeing an anti-competitive effect that harms consumers. I think it's also important for those people who are going to be litigating these claims going forward to see whether there is a carry-through of what arguably was in Judge Wesley's opinion and appears to be in Justice Thomas's opinion, that the plaintiff now may have, in these types of cases, a significantly higher initial burden than many would have expected to prove that the challenge restraint has, in Justice Thomas's words, a substantial anti-competitive effect that harms consumers. That could end up having a dramatic effect depending upon, especially if you run into judges like Judge Wesley, who maybe are viewed as being somebody who is going to look carefully at dismissal of claims like this and could have a very powerful and meaningful effect on people going forward. I'll also note to the extent I've now talked long enough to bore anyone, an interesting thing may have occurred, which is on the first page of Justice Breyer's dissent, which is joined by Justice Sotomayor, Justice Kagan, and Justice Ginsburg, it appears that Justice Breyer, the Francophile, has misspelled the word laissez-faire. So I will at least draw that to all of your attentions, that those things happen to even the great minds on the court. With that, I think I will kick it to questions. I know this was a little shorter, but I think it may be that knowing what people are concerned about or have questions about, I can enlighten them more, other than the two big takeaways that I think are the most important parts of this case.
Thank you. Let's go to audience questions. In a moment, you'll hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, to request a floor, enter the star and then the pound key on your telephone keypad. When we get to your request, you will hear a prompt, and then you may ask your question. We will answer questions in the order in which they are received. Again, to ask a question, please enter the star and then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Let's go to our first question.
Thank you. This is Chris Bowen. I was wondering if you could comment on the future of vertical antitrust enforcement in light of this decision and in light of the rejection of the challenge to the AT&T Time Warner merger earlier this year.
I think the best I can say, I know a little bit less about the AT&T Time Warner merger. I will say that I think you gathered, you may well see that there is a harder burden at the first step of the burden shifting analysis here in the rule of reason. And it may be that you, if that is the case, you're going to see, I think probably rightly, that there needs to be a strong showing of a substantial, this is Justice Thomas's words, anti-competitive effect that harms consumers. And I think that remembering to look at the consumer and find anti-competitive effects on consumers I think is an important touchstone in this area, and it may be that you're going to have a harder time with people bringing enforcement actions when it will be very theoretical or circumstantial what the harm to consumers would be. And I think that could have a significant effect on the willingness of public entities to bring enforcement actions if, in fact, the first step in the rule of reason analysis is raised. That's going to lower the likelihood of cases being brought, probably. I mean, I just can't imagine if there's a real shift in the rule of reason analysis and a broadening of the market definition, that just makes these cases trickier by definition.
Thank you.
While not seeing another question lined up, I'll ask one. You mentioned near the beginning briefly about the DOJ's role in this case and their stance. Did you have any additional thoughts on that and why they seem to kind of straddle the fence and be on both sides of this case at different points in its development?
Yeah. I don't have any deep insights into why Noel and Noel Francisco and his team did that precisely, but I will say that it is, you know, working in government service, it was surprising to me, and I think to many, how strongly Judge Wesley's opinion seemed to not just stop in its tracks in enforcement action, but shift some of the analysis, you know, and especially from a very esteemed panel in the Second Circuit, shifting the analysis to focus more on consumers and to potentially raise the burden at this first step. And for those who believe that the antitrust laws are important but can be can lose sight of consumers and potentially be a tool of the government to an interim tool against businesses, that's a very powerful message from Judge Wesley's opinion. And you immediately saw Arizona was the first state, and then several other states started dropping out of pursuing an effort to flip Judge Wesley's opinion. States never like to lose a case, but I think that may reflect the idea that if losing the case comes with it a clarification of the law that might actually correct for some past slippage in how things were applied, there's not a reason to then pursue that appeal further and try to flip what is otherwise a correct opinion that ends up benefiting consumers in the future. And I think that may well have been part of what happened with DOJ, is DOJ was looking at Judge Wesley's opinion and saying, if that's the opinion that's going to stand and it's going to potentially have these two effects, where you look at a broader market, you really focus on consumer harm, and you don't allow claims to proceed unless they can show that consumer harm, that may well have tracked with DOJ as well, that's a good standard. Once the case was taken and that standard was now not gone, but now something new was going to come out, at that point, I think you see the advocacy side come back around. DOJ was involved in this case. They were one of the ones that brought the claims. And once it's back on, they're going to continue to argue robustly for winning. But I think you saw that little nuance that can occur, especially when you're representing the United States, that a large number of people may well have viewed Judge Wesley's opinion as being, if you're going to lose a case, at least get a good set of law like that is strongly focused on consumers and may well be a better representation of what antitrust law should be.
Interesting. And also, in terms of the breakdown of the justices and what happened in the case, was it a bit of a surprise what came out this morning, or was this what was expected?
Well, I will say that to me, like, I've not followed this case quite as closely as maybe some who spend every day living antitrust, but having read Judge Wesley's opinion and knowing what was out there, I was fully expecting that there was at least a substantial likelihood of a 5-4 decision that robustly restates a lot of what Judge Wesley said. I can tell you that it is somewhat surprising because some people seem to think that at the oral argument, some of these swingier justices were very probing in their arguments against Amex and seemed to indicate a lack of comfort with Amex's position. So I think it was somewhat of a surprise. I think the fact that Justice Thomas wrote it was somewhat of a surprise to people. But it seems to be a very full-throated embrace of some of the important principles that Judge Wesley set down in his Second Circuit opinion.
A brief announcement. Our next telephone conference call is scheduled for later today at 4 p.m. Eastern Time and will be on the three Supreme Court gerrymandering cases this term. The expert joining us will be Hans von Spakovsky, who is the manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative and senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. A reminder to keep an eye out for emails announcing upcoming Teleform calls. You can also consult the full schedule of our upcoming Teleform conference calls on the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org. Also available there are podcasts of previously recorded Teleform calls that you may have missed. While not seeing any more questions lined up, the line is still open. If you wish to ask a question, just dial the star and then the pound key on your telephone keypad. And in the meantime, OH, if you had any closing remarks?
Yeah, I guess, and this goes back to the question that was asked, and maybe I didn't answer this fully. If I were in the antitrust space, I would pick up Justice Thomas, if I were on the defense side of the antitrust space, something I am not in at the moment, I would pick up Justice Thomas's language and work very hard because you may find a lot of judges who are very open to embracing a higher standard for plaintiffs at the first step of the burden shifting analysis, a very consumer focused view that requires something more than circumstantial evidence to show consumer harm, and especially if whatever is being challenged and you're on the defense side is a something that can be offered as a pro-consumer or effect, this could well be a big opinion, especially the language that I keep flagging about how the plaintiff needs to show a substantial anti-competitive effect that harms consumers. This case is arguably about two-sided markets, the definition of the market and the credit card markets in particular, and that will be a major role that this case will play going forward to the extent that people bring antitrust claims against large tech companies or those that have a two-sided market where both sides are pretty robust and involved and you need to attract both sides. But the idea of the burden being raised, if that is true, and it's only a first read, that would be huge. And the defense bar would, I think, if I were on this defense side, I would be grabbing a hold of that because it's unclear exactly how courts will use this language. But there is a roadmap here that potentially makes motions to dismiss harder to overcome for plaintiffs, harder to overcome for states, which is a rough road for us who work in public service, but a more powerful tool on the defense side in these cases if it's tested and used that way. So I think this opinion is about two things, and one is a very interesting one and what you'll see a lot of the articles about, and the other one, it's not 100% clear to me that that's what it's doing, but it looks like it's raising the bar in a way that applies to all sorts of antitrust claims, irrespective of whether they're two-sided markets or not.
Very nice. Thank you very much. And on behalf of the Federalist Society, I want to thank our expert for the benefit of his valuable time and expertise today. We welcome listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us today. We are adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.